Salo Falava. I'm Afamasanga Seyuli Salamasina Von Reiki, and I'm inviting you to join me on a journey through the evolution of our Pacific cultures on Culture Compass. We'll meet incredible people dedicated to preserving traditions while adapting them for today's world. Join me as we travel the Pacific to celebrate our resilience, revival, and deep-rooted connection.
Search for Culture Compass wherever you get your podcasts to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
Talofa lava, malelele, good follow morning, bulavina'a. This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia, usually produced in the lands of the Bunurong and the Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. But today, it's Mbula from Suva, the capital of Fiji, at Fiji Broadcasting. Coming up on the show today, an Australian gifted patrol boat, which ran aground in Vanuatu, returns to Australia for repairs. But questions remain over what really happened to it.
But when they keep transporting ministers and VRDs around, what if they get an emergency call to go and meet a boat somewhere that's fishing in our waters?
Also, Papua New Guinea's conjoined twins could now be headed for Germany. And Tonga's royal netballers gear up for their first series on home soil. All that and more coming up in the show. I am Livia Movono. Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beat. But first, we are going to head to the Solomon Islands, where a large explosion rocked Honiara overnight. Police say a World War II bomb exploded in West Honiara near Town Ground Rugby Stadium last night. Thankfully, only one person was injured. A young man is in stable condition in hospital with injuries to one of his arms. For more, we're joined by my colleague Robert Iroga, publisher of Solomon Islands Business Magazine Online, who lives near the site of the explosion. Robert, good fellow morning, one talk.
Hey, good morning, and bola to you there.
Vinaka, thank you for joining us on the show, Robert. So, take us through, what did you hear and see last night?
Yeah, good morning. I was just like, my house is just a few hundred meters away from where the explosion occurred. It was after 6, around 6:30 p.m. yesterday. When a huge bomb exploded at Town Ground, just opposite the rugby stadium, and it caused a lot of panic. A lot of people were running all over the place, and of course there was a big fireball coming out from in the air as a result of the blast. It was shocking and very frightening, even from where I was.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on your Facebook last night, Robert, and also wondered what happened. Have you since found out what caused the bomb to explode?
Correct. I managed to run down not long after the bomb exploded. And it happened quite surprisingly. There was a fire that was lit to a kind of a dead tree, and the fire has been burning for the last few days, and it got down all the way down to the root of the tree and the ground, and it caught up with the bomb, and that's what caused the explosion. That's what the people from the explosive ordnance told me last night. It was caused by a fire which has been lighting there for some time, and they said the threat from the bomb had already gone by the blast, but they will be coming back today to do further scan if there are many more bombs or other bombs still in the area.
That sounds pretty dangerous, Robert, and you're saying that only one person was injured, but were there other people nearby?
Correct, yes. You know, Solomon's betel nut is a very popular kind of commodity, and people chew them every few meters there's a stall or people selling market, and there was some young people were selling some betel nuts around the place when the explosion happened. And the person was believed to be around that place, and he was caught, not so much caught, but he was shocked. And then the bomb didn't hit him or her directly. But what happened was that that was like the blast that caused what happened to injured some part of his body, but it's not really clear at this stage according to my colleague, it's a minor one. Yeah.
But Robert, this is, I mean, I'm glad to know that this was minor, but this is not an isolated incident, is it? You had incidents like this before.
No, where I live, it's called Lengakiki, and a few years ago, some people were also doing some hooking when a bomb exploded, resulting in a few deaths this time. And it's quite littered with bombs, according to some of these people, experts, and they had spoken against people lighting fires for big fires around our community here, even burning buses. They're quite worried about, because it might cause the bombs to explode. So it's quite dangerous. There was a story of a young child who was only a few meters away from the bomb, and she just escaped by like few meters by the skin of her teeth. And she went to a shop. And she was coming home, and then she just walked by the bomb, and a few meters away, the bomb exploded. Yeah, that's what the father told me last night. Yeah.
But Robert, Honiara was the site of a major battle during the Second World War. How much contamination remains within the city as a result of that?
A few years ago, I ran a map on where the possibility of where the bombs were dropped, and it's almost everywhere in Honiara is littered with bombs. So it is quite dangerous for people living here. And we are now 80 years now, and then some of the bombs are getting old, and they can easily be touched, and then they get exploded. So that's what is happening right now. So right, it's a huge battleground here in Honiara between the Americans and the Japanese. The bomb last night was an American one, according to the police. Yeah.
Robert, do you personally ever see remnants from the war ever lying around when you were growing up?
Yes. Actually, we in my job previously, the Solomon Star, some people were just digging next to us, and then they found a bomb, and we did a story on that. And just recently, I actually saw a live bomb. People carried it out from one of the communities up where I live. So it's quite something that is known, or that can be easily seen here by communities, because of the massive amount of bombs that were really thrown into this area during the Second World War, either by the Americans or the Japanese on each other.
Do people in Honiara live in fear, basically, of leftover remnants of the war?
We do, but we even more getting fear if issues like this happen. And last night it brought back a lot of memories of the realities of living in Honiara. And we continue to call on those responsible to help us to scan some of our places, especially places where people live now, to actually clear them of these old bombs which were dumped here in Honiara.
That was Robert Iroga, publisher of Solomon's Business Magazine. I want to talk. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Lita, and have a nice day.
Kick off Almost your Sunday with Kuntamari Crofts on Pacific Sundays, right here on ABC Radio Australia. Pacific Sundays is a laid-back weekly wrap of all things Pacific, from news, sport, and entertainment to the best island music vibes. So whether you're chilling out, heading off to church, or catching up with family, be entertained as you do it with Pacific Sundays. Every Sunday at 6 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Almost a month after Vanuatu's Australian Gifted Patrol boat ran aground on a reef, questions remain unanswered about what really happened. The RVS Takuare wasn't on patrol when it struck a reef off of Epi Island. Instead, it was operating as a ferry for government officials. The vessel is now being prepared to return to Australia for repairs amid calls for transparency of the investigation into the incident. Vanuatu reporter Lily Rose Wellwell has the story.
The RVS Takuare now sits on a transport vessel on Evate, lifted from the reef where it was stranded for almost a month. The patrol port had only recently returned from Australia, where it underwent major repairs following damage from Cyclone Kevin in 2023. The grounding has drawn attention to questions of transparency and the use of government assets. Dr. Willie Tokon, the CEO of Transparency International Vanuatu, says the ports are intended to safeguard the country's maritime waters.
These patrol boats are supposed to be for patrolling our waters, our economic zone. It means that they should be on alert all the time, ready to respond. But when they're transporting ministers and VRBs around, what if they get an emergency call to go and meet a boat somewhere that's fishing in our waters?
With the Taquare out of service, Vanuatu's capacity to patrol its waters is limited, a concern given the recent rise in illegal fishing and drug trafficking, including the seizure of 450 kilograms of cocaine from a foreign yacht. Vanuatu's former police commissioner, Joshua Pong, told the ABC that the absence of one boat could not go unnoticed by leaders of organized crime.
There is no patrol boat within the Vanuatu water. There will be a lot of illegal activities. The usage of the patrol boat should be used according to its role. In my capacity as the commissioner, previous commissioner, it wasn't made or built to be the VIP transportations.
He also raised concerns over the level of training provided to officers involved in patrol operations. The ABC has asked the Vanuatu government a series of questions over the circumstances surrounding the patrol boat's grounding. The government declined to answer specifics, only indicating a press release could be issued soon. An investigation is being carried out by police.
Why should the police investigate themselves? We need to have an independent organization or body to investigate the police.
Dr. Willie Tokon. Speaking to the ABC last week, Vanuatu government spokesperson Gary Manasa said the priority is to recover and repair the vessel.
There's one boat left that will be used as the patrol boat. Of course, we can't rely on the Taquare anymore. It will have to go undergo repair. But I'm sure the government through the Ministry for Internal Affairs and police and then the maritime wing will have measures in place to ensure that the role of patrolling our waters are done. Of course, there will be some slight handicaps, let's say, but these are some issues that, you know, that has happened. And so we will have to do with what we have at the moment.
Dr. Tokon says transparency in the investigation will be critical to maintaining public trust and ensuring government assets serve the intended purpose.
Like I said, if we have the information that this port was went under the reef when it was transporting VIBs and ministers around, then this is cross corruption, misuse of public property.
That was Dr. Willie Tokon from Transparency International Vanuatu, ending Lily Rose Wellwell's report. Stay tuned, because coming up, we will get an update of Papua New Guinea's conjoined twins. Papua New Guinea's conjoined twins could now be headed for Germany for surgery, not Australia as initially planned. The baby boys are connected at their lower abdomens and were successfully delivered at a small rural hospital 3 weeks ago. Jagan Ra is the CEO of Manolos Aviation, the airline that medevaced the Queens to Leh and then Port Moresby for treatment. He says the boys are building up strength with hopes they will be flown to Germany for surgery to separate them.
We've been trying our best to make arrangements for the twins to have better diagnostics and better care outside of Papua New Guinea. Doctors in Angau, they do a lot with very little. Doctors in Port Moresby General, they do a lot with very little, but we need to go to a place where there's better diagnostics. And Dr. Simon, who is now at the University of Freiburg, he used to work in Papua New Guinea for 5 years in the same district where the twins are from. And he is making arrangements for the twins to be admitted to the university where he is working, which I think is a great solution. Number one, the doctors there are very well experienced, and also the Dr. Simon is there. Him and his wife both speak Pidgin English, and we'll be able to translate for the parents who are not fluent in the English language. So, yeah, the parents probably have to learn German very soon.
Why do they need to be taken abroad?
Well, the surgery is very complex to start with. I think it's very complex and it's very risky. And there are many things we can do to try and save the twins. And there is one thing that we can't do. And the thing we can't do is not do anything. It's just not possible. So we have to try our best. It is risky to try and save both or one of them. And the very first thing the twins will have to undergo is heart surgery, open heart surgery on the smaller, weaker twin. He has to get strength. So after the open heart surgery, they will be in the intensive care unit of the university, and I'm led to believe it's difficult to describe the level of technology and medicine available in that special care nursery, but it's basically the world's best. So I'm led to believe that after the open heart surgery on the smaller twin, who's probably 2 kilograms, is completed, that the twin will remain in induced coma for quite a number of days. They will be intubated, but also they will be getting special intravenous food. And what I heard from Germany, that one of the food they get is very expensive. And if Germany says very expensive, believe me, it's very expensive. And I don't know if it's breakfast, lunch or dinner, but one meal they will be getting during recovery is probably going to be a 5,000 kina meal a day. And then all the other glucose and whatever goes with it, yeah, I can't tell you. But yeah, I believe that the food they'll be getting is very expensive.
How urgent is it to get the twins over there?
At this stage, the twins, the way I see it, they are now 3 weeks old, and they need air to breathe and they need food. So in my view, they've got the will to survive. Doesn't appear to be anything which affected them severely, otherwise they would be dead by now. So considering they're already 3 weeks old, they have got a high level of will to live, but we need to move on, because the more we wait, then the higher the risk is of losing one of them.
How likely is it that they will both survive?
From what I hear from Germany now, Germany is actually willing to take them in. They're willing to separate them. They're willing to have them in the hospital for 2 years. And at this stage, all indications are that they will both survive.
What about funding? Are there any funding issues?
Funding will be, I think the aspect which needs covering to Germany will be the transport to Germany, which we have mainly covered or will cover. We are hoping for the twins to be able to go on a commercial flight by securing a number of seats and making special arrangements for the incubator and the oxygen on board. So next step for us will be Air Niugini to talk to them. Once we get a picture on how that works, then we go to the next airline. So at this stage, we look like we are able to get them onto a commercial flight to Germany. There would be costs involved, and we've got entities who indicated that they will assist, private entities who will assist with the transport to Germany.
How soon do you expect that they could get on a flight?
I would suggest another 10 days going through paperwork. Yeah, I would hope, the twins are 3 weeks old now. I hope another 10 days is not going to hurt them.
That was Jorgen Ruh from Manolos Aviation speaking to Papua New Guinea correspondent Marion Farr. There were celebrations in Timor-Leste this week when the country officially became a member of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN. It's a major milestone for the young country and the realization of a long-held dream of the generation that fought for and won independence from Indonesia. So what do people hope ASEAN membership will deliver? Timor-Leste reporter Vonia Vieira asked some of the young country's young people what they thought.
During the celebration of the significant day, the national anthem of Timor-Leste, Patria, and the Asian anthem were played. For Elia Da Costa, a researcher at Lahamutuk NGO, which focuses on economy, good governance, and human rights, it is an important day, but also a reminder of the challenges the country faces.
We are think is not the final objective of Timor-Leste to become a member of ASEAN. We think it is a step to Timor-Leste to reflect of our internal situation, especially in our economy situation.
For Elia, there are many challenges that Timor-Leste faces, and the government must work to resolve them.
Challenge that we have right now in Timor-Leste is most of our consumption we depend on the importation. And also the government's also already announced about the fiscal cliff issue that will happen in 12 years coming. So about the impact from the economy in Asia is not certain.
Independent researcher Fernando Ximenez says there could be risks to ASEAN membership.
We are very skeptic toward the Timor-Leste government. We have a very we see there's a lot of risks that Timor-Leste are going to face, because as we see, even before we enter ASEAN, we already liberalized many sectors in Timor-Leste. We already promote privatization and liberalization in terms of economic aspect. And that's are not going to help the country economy. It's going to empower more private sector and also the private sector from abroad, but they are not going to support the national, especially the popular strata in the country. For instance, the working people, the peasants, the marginal community, marginal people.
He concerned local businesses could be outmuscled by bigger international competitors.
Timor-Leste is just Timor-Leste. The market is very small. The country is very still mixing between market and traditional, what we call subsistence economy. It's very traditional.
He adds that there is limited industrial development and manufacturing in the economy.
But they are not seeing how to empower the local economy, like investing in productive sector, in a strategic sector, like to control a strategic sector, ensure that strategic and productive sector are being oriented, directed by the government. Means that, for instance, what is the strategic sector in the country? Finance, telecommunication, agriculture, and other aspects, education and health.
Renato de Oliveira, a young land rights activist, believe ASEAN membership is the reconnection of progress and stability after two decades of independence. But he says challenges still remain.
Our reality on the ground remains challenging. According to the IMF, in 2025, our non-oil GDP was about 1.94 billion per capita. The World Bank reports that 42% of Timorese people is also live below the national poverty line. This means that while ASEAN membership is a big diplomatic success, the everyday lives of young people haven't improved much yet. Many of us still face unemployment, limited opportunities, and poor services.
Roughly 50% or more of the population is under the age of 25. And he says the government must ensure they are not exploited by foreign companies.
So more than 70% of youth work in informal or insecure jobs. This imbalance means that when ASEAN markets open, big foreign companies could dominate, while small local businesses will be struggling to compete. Young people might end up being a cheap labor, entrepreneurs or innovators.
Renato de Oliveira says the government needs to help young people take advantage of the opportunity provided by membership of ASEAN.
Through access to finance, skill trainings, and also one of the important things is that market links. And the policy must support agriculture modernizations, creative industries and small enterprise, so that ASEAN membership becomes a bridge to opportunity for young people, not just an empty, like another empty promises.
And that was Vonia Vieira reporting from Timor-Leste.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's hammer time!
The 2025 Pacific Championships. ABC Radio Australia will be broadcasting every men's and women's game. PNG, Cook Islands, Fiji, New Zealand, Samoa, Tonga. Hear all the action of the 2025 Pacific Championships, Saturday and Sunday from midday PNG time on ABC Radio Australia, your home of rugby league in the Pacific.
Hold the front page!
It's time to scan the newspapers and take a look at what is making the headlines around the Pacific region. And to do that, I'm very happy to be joined by producer Kyle Evans. Kyle, how are you?
Good morning. I'm well, if they. I've been quite busy over the last week, in and out of training courses and things like that. Prior to that, I had some food poisoning and was off for a couple of days. So it's good to finally be back on the Friday remote edition of Pacific Beat.
I'm happy to hear you, and I hope you're better now.
Yes, much better now. It was, this time last week I was in a bit of a different way, but no, much better now. Thank you.
Good to hear. All right, let's get right into it. Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister James Marape has been saved from having to face on a confidence motion. Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. So as recent as yesterday, James Marape was staring down the barrel of a leadership challenge from none other than former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill. However, he's been spared thanks to a constitutional amendment which was passed earlier this year. So this is what's being reported by RNZ, who actually saw a signed letter yesterday from the House Speaker explaining why the motion could not go ahead. And according to that letter, the amendment states that after an unsuccessful motion of no confidence, no subsequent leadership challenge can be tabled for a period of 18 months. And given that Marape faced a leadership challenge back in April, that period has not yet been satisfied, and therefore he's safe this time around.
Wow, and what has the opposition said about this?
So I couldn't find any quote from the opposition. I can't imagine they'd be too happy about this, but no. I did see a quote from Marape, who said the no-confidence motion brought against him was nothing more than a distraction, and he would welcome any challenge to his leadership. But that being said, I can understand why he'd be feeling confident given this constitutional amendment.
Absolutely. And still on leaders, U.S. President Donald Trump has ordered the U.S. military to immediately resume testing nuclear weapons.
Yeah, look, I really blinked when I saw this one this morning. I couldn't believe it. So Reuters broke this story yesterday after Trump made this surprise announcement on Truth Social while aboard his Marine One helicopter. He said he was instructing the Pentagon to test the U.S. nuclear arsenal on an equal basis with other nuclear powers, China and Russia. Now, it's not clear whether the president was referring to nuclear explosive testing or whether it was just the flight testing of nuclear-capable missiles like ICBMs and things like that. However, in either case, it's very concerning, and it will be the first time the Americans have tested their capabilities in 33 years. According to the president, Russia has the second biggest nuclear arsenal, while China is a distant third but is fast catching up. And the shock announcement obviously comes in response to those two Russian nuclear powered tests which were carried out by Vladimir Putin in recent days. So we still, I think, definitely need more info, but given the Pacific's legacy with nuclear testing, it's very concerning news indeed, not only for the Pacific but for the world also, I think.
That's right, Kyle, and I'm looking across the Pacific to hear what the region feels about this. But on to more exciting topics. It's week three of the Rugby League Pacific Championships, and Tonga have received a huge boost. Tell me about that.
Yeah, huge boost indeed with star forward Jason Tomalolo having been cleared to return from a knee injury, giving Tonga a major boost as it looks to bounce back against New Zealand on Sunday and hopefully qualify for the quarterfinals. Now, as we know, Tonga suffered a heavy loss to Samoa last week in that heavyweight clash in Brisbane. And under the point aggregate system, they don't just need to beat the Kiwis to qualify for the quarterfinal. They need to beat them well. So they need to win by exactly 17 points or more for them to advance. So that doesn't leave them with much room for error. But at the same time, you know, it's only three converted tries. And I do think they've got the talent to get it done. And if they can get it done, some people are calling it a miracle if they do, they'll get to book a rematch against Samoa at Combank Stadium next week, which is a match that I'm sure that everybody would be salivating for.
Ooh, tue tue, all the best to the Matema'a Tonga group. Meanwhile, the Fiji Mbati will take on the PNG Kumuls. How is that game shaping up?
Yeah, so this is going to be a grand final rematch of last year's Pacific Bowl final. It's not the final yet, I should point out, but both teams are in good form, having gone undefeated so far in the tournament, albeit Fiji are losing some of their top players. Api Korosia, one of my favourite players for the West Tigers, being one of them. Meanwhile, it's also another big week in the women's fixture. We've got the PNG Orchids, they're going to face the Tonga 13. And the Kiwi Ferns will go toe-to-toe with the Australian Gillaroos in what will be a heavyweight women's clash with that one. And all those games will get underway from 1 p.m. on Saturday in PNG and again on Sunday in New Zealand. So, another huge weekend of rugby league action. And I know you're a rugby union fan, Linda, but will you be tuning in for this one too?
I will definitely be tuning in, Kyle. It's not just rugby league. It's the Pacific. It's Valataki Vanua. Can't wait for that action to happen. Thank you so much, Kyle.
Not a problem at all.
It is Friday, October 31, and you're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. If you're just tuning in, I am Lidia Movono from Suva in Fiji at the Fiji Broadcasting Studios. Solomon Islands has been rocked by a large explosion overnight. Police say a World War II bomb exploded in West Honiara, injuring one man who is in a stable condition. Meanwhile, an Australian gifted patrol boat which ran aground in Vanuatu is now being prepared to return to Australia for repairs. But questions remain over what really happened to it. And Papua New Guinea's conjoined twins could now be headed to Germany for surgery, not Australia as initially planned. Coming up, we are going to delve into some sport. To the Kingdom of Tonga now, where the national netball team is about to play its first ever series on home soil. It's not just a huge milestone for women's sport in the kingdom. It's a source of national pride that has the royal seal of approval. Here's Tonga reporter Marion Kupu.
Royalty, sports and national pride combined at the Royal Palace this week when Her Majesty Queen Nanasipau received the Tongan national netball team, Tatala, ahead of the first ever home netball series this week. The Queen warmly welcomed the players, expressing her joy that Tatala will finally take to the court here in the kingdom. She said it's not only a showcase of talent, but also an inspiration to every little Tongan girl to dream big. Her Majesty has named the series Tatala Tu Tone Tour, a tribute to the late Queen Salote Tupo III, whose spirit of unity and pride continues to inspire generations. Tatala will play three games at the Tonga High School Indoor Stadium, the first later today against the Australian Pathway team. For Tatala, this homecoming means more than just sport. It's a history in motion. Captain Huli Taveve says it's an emotional return to play on home soil after years of competing abroad.
Yeah, we're really excited. Just to be here in the first place is really special for us, but to play our first home game on home soil is, yeah, really special for us. So, yeah, excited to be here.
How are you feeling with the preparation for this game?
Yeah, good. I think it's a hard spot to be in because we're all in off-season, so haven't really trained too much, but I guess this is good for us to come together and get a practice match in, and especially to go up against Australian 21's team. I think that'll be a good matchup for us. So yeah, really looking forward to the games. I think just being here with our people in our country, I think, is really cool. And then celebrating the 150th anniversary for Tonga's constitution. So yeah, just really looking forward to being here and spending the next 10 days here.
The tour is part of the national celebration marking the 150th anniversary of Tonga's constitution. As a special gift to the public, entry to all games is free. The series is being funded by the government of Tonga with support from Australia through the Pacific All Sport Program. It's a proud moment for the Tala as they carry the hopes of the nation under the watchful eye of Her Majesty the Queen.
Beautiful sounds out of the Kingdom of Tonga. And that was Marian Kupu with that story.
It's been more than 200 years since missionaries brought Christianity to the Pacific. But since then, the region has grown into a rich blend of diverse faiths, beliefs, and philosophies. Pacific Soul delves into these topics and asks the question, what do we truly believe? Join your host, Melissa Makin, for an insightful talanoa on faith, belief, and spirituality on Pacific Soul. Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's another big weekend of rugby league action ahead in the Pacific Championships, with Tonga out to topple New Zealand and secure a place in the cup final against Toa Samoa. Meanwhile, the Jillaroos will take on the Kiwi Ferns in what amounts to a cup final rehearsal for them, with Fetu Samoa already out of the picture. These games will be played in Auckland on Sunday, while 24 hours earlier in PNG, the Orchids played Tonga in a women's bowl with only pride at stake. But in the men's event, the Kumuls will be battling it out with Fiji for the title. And on the eve of that big clash, the Mbatis coach, Wise Katibirata, has taken aim at the NRL over the way the competition is organised and over the enforced absence of Fiji's women's team. But on a more positive note, with several star names missing, including Viliami Kikau, who just got married over the weekend, he says there's a chance for his younger players to shine.
I keep telling the young kids, when the senior players not playing because of the family commitment or they got injured, you know, the regular NRL boys, it's a good stepping stone for you young kids, you know. I say that here, if you remember, in 2023, no one knew the name of Kurt Donoghue, Caleb Novale, Kitione Kautong. This type of tournament for the Fiji Mbatis will open doors to the NRL club to watch some of these young kids. You know, now Kurt Donoghue is doing well for himself at the Dolphins. Kitione Kautong become a regular at Parramatta. You know, Caleb Novale this year play more NRL games, so which is a good stepping stone for some other kids.
Once again, though, of course, you're taking on Papua New Guinea on their home territory. Does that disadvantage you?
No, it's not. If you look at 2023, we focus more on ourselves and the way we want to play. You know, the first game we got them, then we fell away on our second game. We don't do the basic properly again. This year, we go back to the basic stuff. We know we got points. I keep saying that. I know we got points all over the park. We're just going to focus on all the fundamental area of the game. Don't do a lot of errors. Complete our sets and kick long.
You mentioned 2023, of course, when you beat Papua New Guinea first time around and then lost to them in what was the final that year. But of course, last year and this year, you don't get a second chance. So what do you think about the way that the championship keeps changing? It's been going for 3 years now, and it's not been the same twice.
Yeah, that's the NRL. I think they should change the way they run the competition regarding the Tier 1, Tier 2. I think they should do a round robin. Majority of the boys are playing NRL. They're all islanders. You know, we should play in Tonga, play in Samoa, play in Fiji, play in Papua New Guinea. That's how you grow the game. You know, in Australia, New South Wales and Queensland, the game is massive. But you want to grow the game in Fiji and Tonga and Samoa and PNG, you know, they should put the team together. Look at Samoa and Tonga on weekend, how many people are watching. You know, they should bring a double header to Parramatta, you know, where you play Tonga, Samoa, you know, Fiji, New Zealand, or Papua New Guinea or something like that. You know, that's That's the way to do it. That's just me. I think they should come up with a concept where everyone should get equal opportunities.
So the ideal situation for you this year will be to go out and beat Papua New Guinea and then play against the team that finishes bottom between New Zealand, Tonga and Samoa in a promotion relegation playoff, as it were, and have the opportunity to go up and play against Australia next year.
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone should get an opportunity to play against, you know, the top side. We come good this weekend, you know, we should get a chance to play. We ever come third on the other team. In saying that, you know, next year Fiji should get a chance to tour to England. Kids playing rugby league in Fiji saw that, you know, they'll want to train hard, work hard, because they know they've got a chance, you know, to come and play in NRL. And the growth of rugby league in Fiji is massive.
And the other thing, of course, which on the one hand has done Fiji a big favour, but on the other hand hasn't, is the fact that the Bulikula had to go to Canada to play two games, which they won, and they qualified for the World Cup, which is tremendous. But of course, they're not taking part in the Pacific Championships because the two sets of games were scheduled at the same time. That must also be incredibly frustrating, because the Bulikula, I'm sure, would love to be there in the Pacific Championships.
Don't get me started there. Now, the Bulikula, first thing first, you know, rugby league in Fiji just started, especially the girls' competition. You know, we don't have the fund like the other nations do have. So we have to scrap every funding weekend to send the team across there. You know, they should have a look at the competition Bulikula done last year. You know, they won one, they go across to New them to play. They nearly won on that game. You know, they should give them Bulikula automatically to be part of the World Cup rather than sending the team there. You know, I said it again, we don't have the funding like every other nation do have. You know, we should be playing here. That's the most important competition, because we got a lot of young Fijian girls who are playing on the NRLW and Harvey Norman Cup. And the girls in Fiji, they now they play 3 years in a row. So we need to have a look at that properly. Instead of sending a team there, we should send a team here. Going to Canada, the Fiji Rugby League have to spend so much to get there rather than come to Papua New Guinea or come to Sydney and play.
What do you think of the fact that the Bulikula were asked to play two games of rugby league on AstroTurf, on an American football field? Isn't that a bit of an insult, not just to Fiji, but to the other three teams that were involved too? AstroTurf is not designed for rugby league.
I'm trying to work that out. When I saw the field, half of the field is yellow, half of the field is green. I'm not sure what's going on there, to be honest with you.
That's dangerous, isn't it? American footballers wear crash helmets and padding, and they can throw themselves around and they'll be okay. We're talking here about professional rugby league players who don't do that. And if they hit that AstroTurf hard, it's going to hurt, isn't it?
It's going to really hurt. I better talk to some of the girls, some local girls who play on their turf, to see how they feel and how their body cope after the game. You know, you can see the score. You can tell the score, the first game and the second game. It's unfair to the Canadian team, unfair to the Nigerian girls. So I think in the future, the Fiji Bulikula should not go there, or any Pacific Island, Tonga, Samoa, Cook Island. They should just always play here. I don't know what the NRL or the international body think of.
One last point to make. Big weekend, of course, of international rugby league for the Mbati, but in the same stadium, the National Football Stadium in Port Moresby, the Vusu Raiders from Fiji take on the Lay Snacks Tigers for the Melanesian Cup, the Pacific Championship between the two champion teams from the two countries.
Yes.
Fiji have never won it. So, I mean, this could be a great incentive, couldn't it, for you, if the Vusu Raiders can get one over the Tigers, who've won the championship three times.
Vusu Raiders, they play different style of football. They got some good young kids coming through the rank. If they come in and focus on what they can do, we might see the upset on the game day.
The head coach, Wise Kativirata, on the line from the Fiji Mbatis training camp in Port Moresby, and he was talking to Richard Ewart. There's a new warning from environmental experts that might surprise you. Rats, weeds, and other invasive species are threatening the Pacific's ability to cope with climate change. These invaders are damaging the ecosystems that help island communities recover after storms, protect shorelines, and produce food. Reporter Jordan Fennell spoke with PREP invasive species advisor David Moverley, who says it's a reminder that tackling climate change in the Pacific isn't just about cutting emissions. It's also about protecting nature from the species that don't belong there, like the taro vine in Niue.
So taro vine is a made-up name. We don't always use scientific names, particularly with communities and countries. It's just easier to go with names that people know the plant as. So taro vine is a big broadleaf vine which attaches itself to other trees, and it's very successful by suckering and forming dense infestations. For example, on Niue, it covers in excess of 100 hectares, and it basically covers the forest floor or the mid tiers of the forest and also the canopy, eventually killing all the plants. So it's a very big problem. And because of the size of the infestations and the difficulty in accessing them, and also the types of herbicides and other types of methods that are available, really the only answer is a natural enemy.
You said you are developing a natural enemy. Are you able to just expand a little bit on that, perhaps?
In a lot of countries, weeds are really widespread, so we can't manage them in traditional ways. We need to look at, firstly, ways that are realistic. I mean, over wide landscapes, you would need just, you know, years and years of manual labour to manage them. It's just unrealistic. One method of management that we work on with our PISM's partner is Bioeconomy Science Institute in New Zealand. And what they do is they go and try and find natural enemies, which are either bugs or beetles or things that impact on these weeds, but in their natural home and their country.
And so in this case with the taro vine, there is something like that, that's sort of like a bug or a beetle that's being worked on to test whether or not it would be a natural enemy, and then that might be deployed in UA or something like that?
So currently we're looking at a lace bug, which is found somewhere else, and we're hopeful, following robust testing, that it will be able to be introduced to UA.
How exactly are invasive species, I guess, threatening the Pacific's ability to deal with climate change in particular? Is that something that's being studied for a long time? Is it recent that you're doing this work on it? What does that sort of look like from SPREP's perspective?
The Pacific invasive species is the key driver of biodiversity loss. If you can remove that impact, it provides a more resilient natural framework for people to exist. At the same time, climate change is creating more opportunities for invasive species to expand and dominate. They love nothing more than disturbance and an opportunity to expand their range. This creates a positive feedback loop, emphasizing invasive species' impact on the environment and livelihoods. By managing invasive species or removing them, we can improve the resilience of both ecosystems and communities. And that's really what the focus is lately.
I know that there's some success stories that have happened that you might be able to speak to, islands where maybe the example of removing rats has led to seabirds coming back. Are you able to just perhaps tell that story and how that all came about?
A great example of this is on Mount Te Lau in the Vava'u Islands in Tonga, where this has been underway for 10 years now. Back then in 2014-15, there was the Tongan whistler, which was classified as threatened. It wasn't endangered per se, but it's a very small bird. It's yellow and brown. Local people there hadn't seen it for a very long time. People hadn't heard it in a very, very long time. Following 10 years of just managing, the key part was managing the rats, which is just 30 bait stations a month to manage. Now the Tongan whistler is widespread right across the main island of Vava'u and has spread to all the remaining forest areas. That will always be one of my favourite success stories, and it continues to carry on as we move forward with new technology and we're able to manage rats and pigs over larger areas. The future is looking very good for the Tongan whistler.
You mentioned before that you're trying to get the message out about this particular issue. Do you find it's hard for people to understand how invasive species is actually part of the climate story?
I think people traditionally just associate invasive species with either impacting ecosystems and biodiversity, but the impacts are just so much wider. And until you actually acknowledge all those different aspects, it's hard to understand why it's so important. It's obviously impacting people's culture, all their traditions, their livelihoods, as they eat, the stability of their communities. Obviously, a lot of countries, there's huge health impacts from invasive species.
That was David Moverley from the South Pacific Regional Environment Program speaking there. And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. Recapping our top story, Solomon Islands has been rocked by an explosion overnight of a World War II bomb, which detonated in West Honiara.
and it caused a lot of panic. People were running all over the place, and of course there was a big fireball coming out from in the air as a result of the blast.
We'll be back at the same time on Monday. That's at 6 a.m. PNG time. But you can hear us again this afternoon at 5 p.m. PNG time. From Suva, Fiji, I'm Livia Movono. Thank you for being with us this morning.